I think the key is collaboration, right? And being able to collaborate with your colleagues on projects, but it's done differently. People aren't sitting in a formal conference room around a big table. All of these collaboration spaces are anchored with technology so that you can have in-person meetings with people. You can dial in someone who could be, you know, somewhere else dialing in for that project meeting.
You are listening to Fingerprints on Success, the podcast dedicated to highlighting unique imprints left by business leaders, mentors, and successful entrepreneurs. In this show, we'll be bringing on a diverse range of serial entrepreneurs, professionals, leaders, and coaches to uncover the secrets behind achieving success both professionally and personally. Guiding you on this podcast is none other than Bill Barrett, an award-winning corporate and business law attorney and CEO of the law firm Mandelbaum Barrett PC, where he and his team have provided a full array of legal services to both businesses and individuals throughout the country. Get ready and let's get to the show.
Hey everyone, I'm Bill Barrett, your host of Fingerprints on Success, and today I'm joined by Sandy Markwith, who is the driving force behind Studio 1200, a premier architecture and interior design firm based in Short Hills, New Jersey. Recognized as one of the top 50 women in business by NJ Biz and a two-time top real estate influencer by ROI NJ, Sandy's accomplishments speak volumes. Since founding Studio 1200 in 2005, Sandy has propelled the firm to the forefront of the industry, earning a reputation for innovation and excellence. With an impressive portfolio that includes high-profile clients such as Ferrero and Movado, as well as notable projects like Common Lot and Serenade, Studio 1200 is known for its innovative approach and its cutting-edge designs. Sandy's commitment to mentorship is equally remarkable. Through partnerships with institutions like Keene University, Studio 1200 developed a comprehensive internship program where Sandy is dedicated to nurturing the next generation of designers. Her success is a testament to her ability to cultivate lasting relationships, tackle complex design challenges, and consistently deliver exceptional results in the competitive realm of commercial real estate. She's a visionary leader, shaping the landscape of design with her creativity and her expertise. So let's unravel the fingerprints on success of Sandy Markwith. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. This is Bill Barrett, and I'm so pleased to have my guest with me today, Sandy Markwith. Sandy, how are you?
Hi, Bill. I'm great. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you today.
Well, we're thrilled to have you on the program. And, you know, I'd love to start for our listeners and entrepreneurs out there who don't know you or aren't familiar with you as the CEO of Studio 1200. You know, give us a little background on how you got into architecture and design and kind of the history behind becoming an entrepreneur and owning your own company.
Great. Well, it's interesting that you say that, because if you had asked me maybe 20 years ago where I thought I would be in my career, doing what I'm doing right now would absolutely never have made my list. I think probably many entrepreneurs have that same answer, but I always knew from a very young age that I was a creative. I was so into interior design. I was one of those kids that would rearrange my room every week, drove my parents crazy. And I think at the very early age of six, I asked for a subscription to Architectural Digest. I don't know too many six-year-olds that are looking through those magazines. But, you know, I always had this, you know, drive and this, I just knew from very young age that this is what I wanted to do. And design was my passion. And I had great mentors in high school that, you know, they saw that spark of, you know, she's got that, whatever it is, that je ne sais quoi, to have that sort of spirit about following it. And, you know, I had my first job in high school in a co-op program working for a local paint and wallpaper store where, you know, I helped people pick out their paints and their wallpaper and learned how to calculate wallpaper. And another summer job I had was selling furniture at the mall. So it's like, I always knew I had this in me. And, you know, I really wanted to pursue it. So after graduating high school, I went to the Fashion Institute of Technology into their interiors program for, you know, they're well known, obviously, for fashion, but they also have an excellent interior design program. And their program is set up a little differently, where you go 2 years, you get an associate's degree, and you have to reapply to get your bachelor's. And they only took a class of 12 people out of the full 2 year program back into the bachelor's program. So I made that cut, you know, graduated with my bachelor's degree, and really started my career at a very large international interior design firm in New York, and spent almost 15 years with that company, which I think is unheard of, right? Like, everyone jumps around jobs and gains experience and leaps. But I was in, I think, a great place at a great time, where I had amazing mentors across the board that really sort of fostered my, you know, interest in the profession, in the design profession, and gave you sort of the opportunity to grow. So as much as they would sort of let the rope out, I would take it in. And, you know, after being there for 15 years, I had decided that I wanted a change of pace. And I had a young child at the time who was 2 years old. And I said, you know what, I think I'm going to try and do some things on my own and freelance for a while. And a client, an old client, reached out to me and said, hey, you know, we're going to do a restaurant project. Would you be interested in it? And I said, sure, why not? I've got nothing better to do now. And that was really the inception of the design firm. It was very organic. I don't think I, you know, sat down and plotted out business plans and, you know, all of the things that you hear a lot of people talking about. I kind of went into it eyes wide open and said, all right, let's figure it out. And I knew the interior design and architecture business very well, but the running of a business, I had no idea. So, you know, and I think that's the entrepreneurial spirit.
When did it transition from, okay, I'm free, you know, I'm not at this big worldwide firm anymore, I'm transitioning, I'm doing some, you know, some freelance work. But like, when was there like a moment in time when you felt like, hey, this is not just freelancing, this is a business. Like, I'm going to get an office, I'm going to hire people, I'm going to, like, how did that come about? Like, when you had, was there a defining moment where you're like, you know what, this is real, I'm going to do this thing?
Yeah, because of course, you know, I started in the spare room in the house, right? And set up my own little design library and was working out of my house for maybe about 4 months. And I had a client reach out to me and say, you know, we have a big project, you know, we know the work that you do, we'd love to bring you in to work on the project. And then I think that moment was like, oh, this is real. So it's time to sort of up my game a little bit. And through some contacts, I was able to get, you know, just a small loft space that I set up shop in and very organically grew. And, you know, maybe I started out with, you know, an admin assistant, you know, another designer and an architect, and, you know, organically grew from there. And, you know, there was no real roadmap to how we did it. We just started and the work would come. And, you know, I think it's really about you service your clients, you service them well, and the work kind of finds you.
Yeah. You know, we often refer to it as the unique client experience, right? That you try to create something that is unique to you, that people find to be different and makes them want to come to you. And it kind of, as you said, the business finds you at that point. So one critical question is, when you were 6 years old and you asked for the Architectural Digest, did you get it?
Of course I did. You know, and then I would go through each magazine and tear out the pages, and, you know, maybe people had pinups of like Tiger Beat or something in the room, but I had design photos all over my wall as a young child. So I knew it was my sort of innate destiny to be, you know, in design. And it's interesting because if you had ever asked me, you know, would you ever be running a business? I would have said, no way. Like, I don't have the skills to do that. But, you know, I think being intellectually curious about process and, you know, understanding how things happen and how they work is, I think, innate in sort of every entrepreneur and how they run their business, and getting to a point where you're comfortable with that. Because when you first start out, like, I didn't know a whole lot about a business. So it was finding the right accountant and interviewing people and finding the insurance companies that are going to provide you the type of insurance that you need, the legal help, you know, aligning yourselves with partners that are going to grow with you. And I remember to this day, the first accountant that I had always said to me, he's like, you have to do everything in your business the first year. Learn every aspect of your business so that you know how it's supposed to be done. And I was like, okay, sure. But it was me running the books for an entire year. And I learned that I was a meticulous bookkeeper down to the penny. And, you know, to this day, it's like, you know how your business needs to be run, and you're watching the money coming and going. And, you know, I think that was partly the best advice I've gotten, that, and always run your firm as if you were a startup. You know, don't go overboard, you know, and you can imagine as architects and designers, you want to have the most lavish, luxurious space. But I think we really stuck to our guns and said, you know what, you're right. Like, you know, we're designing amazing space for other people. We kept ourselves lean and always, you know, kept that in the back of our minds, being very conservative with how we run our business.
Yeah, it's interesting how most of my entrepreneurs understand and learn very quickly that net operating income is what matters and not top line revenue. As illustrated by your comment, you know, sometimes people that are in corporate America or that are in sales or whatever, they're focused on top line revenue. When you're an entrepreneur, it's what's left at the end of the day, not what necessarily came in the door. So, and another thing too that I find interesting is this really was a calling for you, you know, since you were a kid. Sometimes, you know, you talk to people and, you know, they'll talk about how they stumbled into something almost on accident, or they weren't sure what they wanted to do, and this opportunity presented itself, or, you know, but in your case, it really was something that was a calling. So, so my next question for you is, you know, you've built a very successful firm with a great reputation, and now you do projects all over of all different types of scale and size. And I know some very noteworthy projects that you're on. When you reflect on the entrepreneurial journey, do you think there were certain mindsets that you had or guiding principles that maybe you didn't even know it at the time, but now that you reflect back, you'll say, you know, the way I approach this or the way I think about this or this guiding principle is a huge factor in my success?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I think for me, I have always been a very driven individual. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, you have to have a thick skin, especially I think in, you know, sort of our industry, which, you know, tends to be very sort of male dominated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having sort of that drive and, you know, being the only woman at a table 9 times out of 10 and being able to hold your own in a room full of contractors or, you know, whoever it may be. But I think, you know, sort of that guiding principle of drive, and I think work ethic. And, you know, I don't know where that came from, but being not afraid to put in the hours that it takes to succeed and not just do a good job, to do a really good job. And somewhere that sits inside of me, and just the ability to always want to improve and do better. Is one of the, I would say, the guiding principles I hold myself to. And I think, you know, from a cultural standpoint, that is what we try to foster here at Studio 1200, to really grow the folks that are here. And the fact that we are entrepreneurs, we're conservative entrepreneurs, I'll say that. But the fact that we give people enough sort of freedom and rope to grow and pursue sort of avenues that maybe we aren't doing right now.
So you mentioned something, and it was actually on my little list of kind of personal questions. You pointed out coming up in an industry that is really male dominant, real estate, in general, right? To this day, still many of the seats at the table are filled with men. Share with me some of those challenges, or maybe a story of kind of like, when you think back, there had to be instances where you had to meet that, you know, deal with that challenge and navigate through it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, being a scrappy kid from Essex County, New Jersey, gives you a different point of view, I think, than a lot of maybe other areas, regions in, you know, in the world, I would say. But a great story was one time I was with a colleague and we had to do a project in Nashville. So we flew down to Nashville and we were having, this was for a major insurance company who was building a new building. And, you know, they flew us in as their design team. And, you know, we're in Nashville. We walk into the contractor's office, which was, you know, a room that had a table that was like 75 feet long. Everyone had cowboy hats on. They were smoking cigars back in that day at the table. And we were the only two women in the room. And, you know, they tried to test you a little bit about your knowledge base, but, you know, I'm not one to sort of shy away or back down. And, you know, when I really focused on it, I realized at the end of this, you know, magnificent conference table, there was a gun rack with rifles in it. So I was like, well, I don't know if I've been in too many sort of offices like that. It was a little intimidating, but you don't let them see you sweat. You hold your own, and they realize you can talk the talk, then you're in.
Enjoying the show so far? We've received fantastic feedback since we started, and we love your questions. Entrepreneurs face unique challenges, and as a corporate attorney and CEO, Bill understands that. Whether it's your first location, industry regulations, succession plans, or exit strategies for your business, the journey is rarely a smooth one. Mandelbaum Barrett PC offers listeners of this podcast a 20-minute consultation with their award-winning team. From mergers and acquisitions to litigation, they help entrepreneurs navigate new opportunities, get invaluable insights, and support to not just survive, but thrive. Click the link in the episode description or visit mblawfirm.com for details. Once again, it's mblawfirm.com. Now, back to our show.
Success in all its forms is not easy to achieve in any space for anyone. You have to work hard and a lot of things have to happen to be successful, but it's even more impressive when you do it in an environment where, you know, coming out of the gate, some people will talk about people having a head start in commercial real estate, you know, as a woman, as an entrepreneur coming up, you know, you had to start the race a couple of steps behind and catch up. Before you could run past everybody, you had to catch up first, and it's impressive. So good for you. I think that's it's a great story. So do the flip side of things. I love, by the way, the positive mindsets that you talked about. And in fact, I'm actually working on a third book right now, and it's all about mindsets in business and entrepreneurship. And one of the chapters goes into a lot of detail about outworking everybody. That a common thread among entrepreneurs and the most successful people is not only no fear of hard work, but embracing hard work, and how all of us can even make up for whatever gifts God didn't give us. The choice of working hard is one of those that it's our choice. And, you know, it's a common thread of the most successful people in the world is, you know, unmatched work ethic. So I think that's a great comment. On the flip side of things, if you could kind of advise yourself, you know, to, you know, if Sandy today was talking to Sandy from 15 or 20 years ago, what things would you avoid or not do? Or maybe a kind of, if I could go back and do this again, here's something I wouldn't do or a philosophy I wouldn't have.
Yeah, that's another good question. I would say, you know, starting out in business, you're always, you know, taking sort of the work, all the work that can come at you, you want to really do as much as you possibly can. And very early on, we had an alignment with a client who was a very large hotelier. They owned, I think, about 80 different hotels, and they were hiring us to work across the country. And this was maybe a year and a half or 2 years after I started the business. This was in 2006 and 2007. And, you know, we were rocking and rolling. They were sending us all over the United States to work in all of these, you know, fancy hotels and doing really sort of good design work. And then here comes 2008, when everything falls off a ledge. Them being our largest client, they then declared bankruptcy. So we had to take a big, deep breath because there was a lot of money that was owed to us by them. That we didn't get for a really, really long time. The proverbial don't put all of your eggs in one basket was a really hard lesson to learn. But at that point, I had brought in a business partner who's fabulous. You know, between the two of us being pretty scrappy ladies, like we're like, okay, well, let's figure out how we pivot, which I think was, you know, the big buzzword a few years ago. Get back into doing more of the corporate interiors and residential design and really diversify. And for us, I think that has been, you know, one of the keys to our success is, you know, having that diversity of work. And most people that come to design firms think they really do sort of one or two things, but there are, I think, several practice areas that we very fluidly flow back and forth to. And, you know, that has been, I think, one of our differentiators in the marketplace that, you know, here's this, you know, boutique design firm that does 100,000 square foot corporate interiors projects, yet they're also doing, you know, bespoke high-end custom built homes locally. We're doing work in every sort of downtown in the local region, doing, you know, restaurants, retail, building multifamily housing, and trying to, you know, keep that diversity. It also presents challenges with you have to have a staff that can pivot with you. You know, they can't only do just one thing. And sometimes finding that talent is definitely a challenge, but I think we love the variety of work that we do and wouldn't have it any other way.
So the advice is a couple of points I take out of that. One is beware client concentration, where you've got maybe a huge client that's making up. It's always a tough thing, right? Because you certainly don't want to turn a huge client away, but you always have to have that kind of eerie feeling in the background of, hey, I almost need to do business like I don't have this client.
Exactly.
Because when they go, and as we all know, most clients, it's some are with you your whole career, but most often they have a shelf life, some longer than others, but, you know, and all types of things happen, right? Clients sell their businesses, people merge, they go out of business, they die, all sorts of stuff happens. And you always almost have to operate when you have a huge concentration client, like you don't have them. And then the other thing is be prepared for anything in terms of changing markets, changing economies. The law firm business is very similar. You know, years ago, we decided we had to be a full service law firm in order to really service our clients and entrepreneurs, because you didn't want to ever tell a client they had to go to another firm for something. You wanted to say, of course we do it. And that takes time to build. And as economies change, you know, maybe when your real estate department is down, maybe your litigation department is up, or your corporate department, or, you know, similar to what you just described in terms of all the different aspects of design work and also the different verticals that you described in terms of retail and residential and commercial. And so I think those are all really, really excellent points. So let me shift gears a little bit from mindsets and things like that to, you mentioned early on when you kind of went through your overview that in a couple different points throughout life and in your career, you had great mentors or people that made a real impact on you. Share with us one or two of those people who, when you reflect back and think about your career and your success, you kind of have those moments where you say, you know, if it wasn't for that person or these people, I might not be where I am today. Tell us a little bit about some of your mentors.
Yeah, well, they're different people at sort of different times when you're starting out sort of early on in your career. In high school, like I had the most amazing like home ec teacher that had a small class in interior design. And, you know, she saw my passion for the industry and pushed me to do the work study program and get that job at the paint store and really explore sort of those avenues. When I made it into the professional realm, it's very interestingly enough, I had started one of my first big projects that I worked on was a very well-known law firm in New York that was building a whole new tower on top of the post office. And, you know, I was newly graduated, a junior designer. And again, I think our business is very much in cycles. And this was in the, I would say, mid-90s. And there was definitely a recession, and graduating into a recession was hard. And I found out years later that the project manager that I worked with on that project, you know, kept me and fought to keep me. And then she really took me under her wing. And I went to every meeting on that job. I took meeting minutes. I did whatever I needed to do and really sort of learned the ropes, learned, you know, how to handle situations, how to stay calm under pressure. You know, it was always an interesting process when you'd go to job meetings and the contractors are yelling at each other. And, you know, it's always, you know, a professional sort of manner. And, you know, that has inspired me to give back not only to the younger folks that we have in our office now and really pay that forward, but it's also recognizing that you at some point sort of turn into not the mentee, but the mentor.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you want to make that same deliverable or create those same opportunities, especially when you have a worthy student. Isn't that, doesn't that drive you sometimes when you see maybe a little bit of yourself in someone else?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, you know, we've got a great team of really talented architects and designers that work for us. They, you know, I would say there are some that rise above and you just want to nurture them and, you know, take them under your wing and show them everything that, you know, you can do. But, you know, to me, I want them to be better than I am. So here's what I've got to give, but now you've got to take this and run with it and really sort of spread your wings and go. So
that's great. Good for you. What a wonderful opportunity for all of those people. So, you know, one of the things I always like to talk about on the show, and by the way, when we talk about mentors, you know, Fingerprints on Success is the title of our podcast. And it's why I always ask people about their mentors, all my entrepreneurs, I always want to know, because, you know, it's kind of who had the fingerprints on your success, and hopefully yours are going to be on the success of others. But to use your word from before, pivoting, let me pivot to a question about, I usually like to ask a current events, I call it a current events question, but it's really kind of like, I love to hear what people in different industries consider a hot topic right now, or something that they're either navigating or they think we're going to have to navigate based on what they see coming down the pike. Like, what would you say is a current issue that's on your mind that you're dealing with or think we're going to be dealing with?
Well, I think, you know, for any sort of architecture and design firm, I think really the next big thing is how is AI going to impact, you know, how we work, the work that we deliver, how our process, you know, I think our complete processes are going to change very quickly. And, you know, in order to stay relevant, you're going to need to be sort of on the forefront of that. And, you know, that in and of itself is fraught with all sorts of challenges. You know, we've been testing AI software and how we can use it. And right now we use it in a limited capacity for visioning and sort of brainstorming ideas. But the small fine print of the software maker says that they own all of the content that is created in their software. So from a legal standpoint, you know, trying to navigate sort of those challenges of ownership and ownership of, you know, your instruments of service versus, you know, the software companies is something, you know, that we're at, the very sort of forefront of what is it and what is it going to look like? And I don't think we know just yet.
I think it's a huge point in probably affecting just about every industry, my industry for sure, in the legal profession, and just about everywhere. I mean, my son, who is 16, showed me a video the other day. He was like, "Dad, you got to check this out." And it was this guy sitting at a table with a robot, and they're having like a full-on conversation, and he's asking the robot to do things for him, and the robot is even learned like kind of like casual language. They're having full-on conversation, exchanging items, food. And I just sat there kind of blown away because, as you said, we're kind of like at the beginning of like figuring out where this is all going. But just based on watching that video, you just say to yourself, wow, like I don't think we have any idea where this is ultimately heading, but it's going to have a profound impact on everything that all of us do. And I think in any business, if you're not thinking about AI, as you just described, you're missing the boat. You really need to start, even if you can't figure it out, you got to be thinking about it and monitoring it and seeing how it might impact your business. So, I mean, I think it's a really great point. You know, I also wanted to talk a little bit, as I like to do with all entrepreneurs, you know, everyone is driven by, you know, the measuring stick of success is often dollars and money. That drives people on some level because it's a measuring stick. So, but you know, whether you love what you do or not, there comes a time too where I think for the most successful people, it's really not so much about money anymore. The popular term, I guess, is your why statement. You know, what is your why statement? What drives you? What makes you get up every day and want to do what you do?
Well, I would say, well, there's a lot of different ways to answer that question, but I would say most importantly for us, you know, the ability to touch the lives of so many different people in so many different ways, looking at what we do from a residential standpoint, like you're impacting someone's, you know, life at home and, you know, making that better for them. The workplace work that we do, you know, the ability to have a profound impact on, you know, giving people a really great workplace strategy and experience. You know, there's been this whole shift in, I would say, post-pandemic about sort of work from home and how do you get people back to the office? And it's really creating great workplace that is highly amenitized, that is going to draw people back, and knowing that you can sort of do that and do that well for your clients, I think at the end of the day is what, you know, drives us as a firm, what drives me. I think I learned along the way, I'm a people pleaser, right? And you want people to be happy and you want them to, you know, enjoy sort of the fruits of your labor. Hearing from clients how we've impacted their business. There's a wonderful accounting firm that we have a relationship with for many years. And they said after they moved after 30 years, you know, similar to you guys, 30 years, we designed new workplace. They're like, you know, we have just exploded from a retention and a hiring standpoint. And they're like, there is no way we could have done this in our old office. It was such a hindrance to them being able to attract and retain talent, and knowing that you play a big role in creating sort of that presence for them and helping clients take their ethos and turn it into three-dimensional space for them. It's kind of cool stuff that we do, right? And sure. Being able to make that change and touch that many people, you know, is certainly what drives me.
Well, I can tell you, and I don't mind for our audience giving you a little testimonial, because the work that your firm did for us and that you did for us, that was a game changer for us because we created a space that especially at the time when we completed it, that was fresh and bright and new and visually any direction you looked, you could see the outdoors. It just created an environment that reflected so well on the firm, but also undoubtedly had a positive impact on our recruiting and our ability to not only recruit, but retain people by creating an environment that people wanted to come to. And I'm excited to see what you guys do in this kind of next phase of the post-pandemic, as you just pointed out, which is an amazing point. I know getting people back to work in the workplace is a challenge for probably every entrepreneur just about that listens to our podcast and that we do legal work for. It's very common conversation to talk about. I think most entrepreneurs feel that there is lost productivity with the out of office, kind of these hybrid or out of office schedules, and maybe even more than productivity issues is the inability to collaborate at the same level and to mentor, to teach younger people the profession or the business or the trade, whatever it is, to do it through, you know, a Zoom call or a phone call. It just doesn't have the same impact. And so many people are trying to drive people back to the office. And in fact, you know, maybe you could share with us just maybe a couple of thoughts on how you're doing it and what kind of success maybe you're having in doing it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really, I think the key is collaboration, right? And being able to collaborate with your colleagues on projects, but it's done differently. People aren't sitting in a formal conference room around a big table. All of these collaboration spaces are anchored with technology so that you can have in-person meetings with people. You can dial in someone who could be, you know, somewhere else dialing in for that project meeting. It's always anchoring and looking at the amenities that you're providing sort of your employees. You know, workplace strategy and design has become much more experiential and, you know, not so much just offices and workstations that I think employers and more importantly, employees are looking for sort of that experience where within and just outside of your workplace, you know, what are the amenities that your buildings are offering? You know, what kind of food service? Is it healthy? Are there fitness centers? Are there gyms where people can go and work out? And it's really sort of shifting more of that work-life balance and blending the workplace with the work outside of the workplace and marrying those two pieces together. And for any building owners that have made the leap of updating and renovating their properties and have done it in a Class A way, they are writing leases. And it's very sort of clear that those are the buildings that are attracting tenants today. And, you know, within the workplace, as the younger generations are coming into the workforce, but they don't want to have just like one desk that they sit at. They want to have a variety of areas that they can go to and collaborate and work with their colleagues. And it's much more of a social factor as well as sort of work and really blending those two together.
That's great. And I suspect too that necessity is being the mother of invention for those property owners that have empty buildings or for those companies that are trying to struggle to figure out how to get people back, they're going to have to start visiting all these ideas. So Sandy, one of the other things I wanted to ask you about too is I also understand that you guys are very, very involved with your community and in giving back and as you've built a successful business. Share with us a little bit of some of the things that you're up to in terms of giving back, which I know I think a lot of our entrepreneurs would love to hear about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that has always been one of sort of our pillars as a business to make sure we are involved within our communities and, you know, making sure that, you know, we are impacting them There are plenty of charities that we work with and definitely donate to. We're very much involved in the Northern New Jersey chapter of the United Way. And, you know, they offer. So working with the Northern New Jersey chapter of the United Way and donating to them as a cause, you know, we're very involved in their ALICE program. My business partner, Nancy Doherty, sits on the board of Greenwood Gardens, which if you haven't been, it's one of the most beautiful hidden gems in Essex County, where they're a nonprofit garden. And they're also a client of ours as well. And we're also doing work, really good work with a company called Jespy House, which is located in South Orange. And, you know, they are providing services and housing for the developmentally disabled. They are also a client of ours, where we're building a whole new sort of compound and building for them so that they can elevate the work that they're doing. You know, you'll see many of the towns that are in our surrounding area here in Millburn, Summit, Madison, that, you know, we are doing sort of smaller projects that may not be, you know, the most profitable, but you know that you are helping other small businesses at the same time and growing sort of your brand. So that has always been part of our mission, to make sure that, you know, we are giving back in, you know, multiple ways.
Well, that's wonderful. And giving back to the communities you serve is, it's all part of the blessing of being a successful entrepreneur. So listen, I think that that is actually a perfect place maybe for us to conclude on such a high and positive note. And I really want to thank you for taking the time to be on the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. We certainly enjoyed having you. And as CEO of Studio 1200, we all applaud your remarkable success and your entrepreneurial journey.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed being here and look forward to seeing you soon.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thanks for coming on.
All right. Thanks, Bill.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Fingerprints on Success podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on your chosen platform that you are listening to us on. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this episode with them, or post it on your social media to share with your friends. You can catch the show notes for this episode and any mentioned links in the description of this episode. Mandelbaum Barrett PC specializes in partnering with successful business owners and proven entrepreneurs on all of their legal matters. Visit www.mblawfirm.com for more information. Once again, it's www.mblawfirm.com. We'll see you on the next episode.